May 19th, 2016. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like our current police state, information security, and trying to decide if anyone is even worth helping anymore. I'm Morps. Tonight, I am drinking Deep Edie's lemon vodka, which has more of a kick than I expected, so I've probably poured too much of it. That'll make the show interesting. Static, what are you overindulging in?
The moment I'm eating cheesy chicken crescent rolls. Not drinking anything because I plan on having sex here shortly. And
whiskey is in fact a thing.
No, I have no problem with that. However, the wife has allergies to alcohol. So,
damn. Madman, what are you overindulging in?
Founders Brewing. It's a raspberry ale. The actual name of it I can't pronounce because it's written in another language. And some of these letters don't exist in normal speak. Such as the U with the two dots on it and the little A attached to an E. Those aren't letters. Those are just symbols somebody scribbled on something.
So, you know, we asked RU to join us, but the response he sent me was...
Smoke weed every day!
So we'll... Not sure where RU is at the moment, but...
Well, he's either with Snoop Dogg smoking weed every day, or that's a false advertisement.
He could be at the hospital, you know. He does have...
I don't have it queued up. I replaced it with weed every day.
Oh, that was a perfect setup for
him. Oh, yeah, man, that was set up perfect.
No, sorry.
Should have replaced that one with it.
In my defense, no, I was trying to get the ball cancer one. In my defense, no, Sard is right above ball cancer in the...
Okay. Anyway,
yeah, he's going to come charging back into the channel. Hey! So then we asked, speaking of Sard, we asked him where he was.
I have testicular cancer.
I suck at this.
Have you been drinking too much already?
It's possible. I did start off I had dragon's milk with dinner, and because I found a place in town that sells them. It's like, hello, too expensive nice. For what they should be, but, you know. Yeah. It's also possible that I've just screwed up the soundboard. I need to make a new soundboard. The old ones, back when we used to do the show, and I was playing them all the time, I had this little grid of arcade buttons, 16 arcade buttons, and each one had its own sound effect on it. And that worked fantastically for playing the sound effects too much, but not so much for doing the shows. And now the setup, I'm team speaking in, or not team speaking, team viewering into the broadcast box. And the version of Mix we're using only has these four sound slots, and I have to click them with a mouse. And a lot of time, and half of them are used up with the normal bumpers for the show, like, you know, for example, this guy. So I can't prep all the sound effects like I used to. So, I got to start having like five or six ready to go and just having them on a speed pad again. That is the way to do it. Static, yeah. You worked in radio for a while. How did they do that in radio?
We did a couple different ways. We had boards set up with just, you know, bumps that we just hit. Mm-hmm. Then we had some guys, old school, they actually did it through tape.
Oh, they sat there and played tapes?
like not the tape you're thinking, not cassette tape, but like tape reels.
Oh, geez, they did it on reel-to-reel?
Yep. They had marks on them, you know, to know where things were, and boom.
Oh, shit. Oh, okay. Yeah, because you have, like, I've seen DJs do that with stickers on LPs.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Pretty neat to watch. I never did that part. I always did the bumps through, you know, just through the board.
Yeah. Okay. So, I don't know. More sound effects, less sound effects. What do you guys think?
Appropriate sound effects.
I'm pretty light on them now.
They can be fun. There are some podcasts that's too many.
Yeah.
You just kind of have to watch and know whenever you're going overboard.
Well, yeah, and I certainly used to. I know that. So,
I mean, if your podcast is sound effect driven, then it's too much.
Well, you know,
I expose people to magic.
All these sound effects are old. I haven't really collected new ones in a long time either. So, I think the newest one probably is the RU one. So, or well, it's either the RU one or it's the Zionist Media one, because that one's pretty recent.
Vice News is no different than any of the other mainstream TV Zionist-owned media.
I just need to start trolling YouTube and collecting sound effects. So maybe I'll do that sometime just because I find it amusing. Anyways. So on to the discussion here. This is a couple-parter here, kind of overarching topic. Filmmakers ask pirate to take polygraph and backtrack when he agrees. This is from Torrent Freak. The gist of the story is that the lawyers working for the makers of the Dallas Buyers Club, which I've got to admit, I've never heard of this movie. maybe I'm
I've
way
heard
out
of it,
touch.
Didn't watch it, but I know of it.
You know of it? Okay. So I'm just that out of touch. Yeah, they've apparently sued thousands of BitTorrent users over the past 2 years. Many of these cases ended up being settled for undisclosed amounts. So the short version is they asked one guy for a couple $1,000 of settlement, and he didn't think it was real, so he never responded. And they actually put in a lawsuit against the guy. California resident Michael Armati. A-M-H-A-R-I. I'm Roddy? I don't know. I'm not intending to mispronounce the guy's name. I'm just very American. The filmmakers claimed he downloaded a pirated copy of the movie and was linked to a pirating IP address and demanded $10,000 in a settlement. He denies any involvement, so they asked him to take a polygraph.
And the answer would have been no, and why?
Well, he said okay. He said, sure, I'll take the polygraph. So then they withdrew the offer of the polygraph, you know, to prove that he was innocent. And then they offered to dismiss the case if he would state under the penalty of perjury he was not involved, or while pointing out another possible suspect. So, you know, if you'll narc on somebody else, we won't sue you. So, he submitted his declaration. They moved for default anyways. So yeah, basically the long and short of it is the lawyers for the film company were acting like lawyers and trying to take every advantage they can and basically lying their ass off to the guy. Like, oh yeah, we'll drop the case if you take a polygraph. Oh shit, he went for the polygraph. Yeah, if you narc on somebody else, we'll drop the case. Oh, he narked on somebody else. Yeah, we're not dropping the case. I mean, you know.
That's why you get everything in writing, or just say, fuck you, I didn't do it.
So, pretty much, they've got nothing but an IP address, and the defendant's counsel is saying this action is further proof of malicious motives on the plaintiff's counsel, who proceed against the innocent defendant with nothing more than an IP address to support the allegations, he concludes. So, the behavior is galling and should not be permitted by the court, blah, 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 blah. Short version here is, you know, remember a few years ago that the RIAA and the MPAA said they were going to stop suing people?
They lied.
They lied.
They lied. They lied. And now their lawyers lie, too. So here's the deal. If you ever find yourself on the receiving end of one of these copyright lawsuits, their lawyers are going to lie. Like, a lot.
I know most IPs aren't static, but how unstatic are they? Do they change, like, weekly, monthly?
It depends on what kind of internet connection you have. Most cable modems, they reset. I mean, most of them will have a lease of 72 hours, is usually what the usual number is. Depends on the ISP. Some are shorter, some are longer. So it could change every 72 hours, but generally, if your device's lease on an IP has expired, the DHCP server is going to hand it back the same IP. It's just a convenience. Even if you reset your cable modem, if it comes back up, it's probably going to get handed the same IP back. So it's moderately static, but it's not guaranteed not to change. You know what I mean? So if you turn your cable modem off for, I don't know, an hour, there's a good chance you probably won't get the same IP back. If you turn your cable modem off for a week, I guarantee you're not getting the same IP back. But, you know, just a quick reboot or the lease, the DHCP lease expiring on your IP, there's a good chance you're going to get the same IP back. You know, the university I used to work for, if you connected up a wire, an Ethernet, you didn't actually have a static IP because they were not statically assigned, but you might as well have because you would have to really work to get your IP changed. You know, you'd almost have to have another machine take the IP. You know, you'd be sitting there disconnecting and reconnecting a couple of machines until you finally got one of them to change its IP, you know what I mean? So, or the other way to guarantee that you got a new IP was to manually change the MAC address that you were advertising. That would usually do it because then the HTTP server would think it was a different one. On the other hand, if you connected to one of the wireless networks, you weren't guaranteed to have the same IP for 20 minutes. You know, the lease would expire. You're getting a different one. It was just the nature of the beast. So I would imagine that things like DSL and dial-up would have, you know, well, DSL probably less so. I would imagine DSL, you're more likely to see your IP address change in a cable modem, but it's still not going to be the most common thing in the world. You know what I mean?
I was just wondering how good of an identifier is, well, it came from IP address whatever. Like, well, that could have changed through a dozen different people.
It's not. And the reason for that is not that the IP addresses can change. They can change. You're absolutely right. But I have an IP address, right? And I know that that IP address belongs to Madman's cable modem. The cable modem that, or more accurately, the IP address is leased to the cable modem that Madman pays the bill for. Well, Madman probably has a wireless router attached to that cable modem because most people do. So, how do I have any knowledge that the machine that connected to that wireless router was Madman? How do I know that behind that router was a machine under Madman's control? Now, there's the obvious answer of, well, if you're paying the rent on the internet connection, it's most likely one of your machines doing the deed, right? That's a
would
logical
the argument instance. Be that you're responsible for what your modem is spitting out.
But that is not necessarily the case. You see, somebody could have broken into your computer, could have picked up a virus, your Wi-Fi could be wide the fuck open, you could be using a power line adapter in an apartment complex, and some other asshole could be connected to it. My point is, at least for the criminal standard of reasonable doubt, you want to talk about proving an IP address is the same person? I can introduce tons of reasonable doubt.
Well, this isn't criminal. It's civil. And
true.
It's not beyond a reasonable doubt. It's a preponderance of evidence, I believe.
Yeah, it's something like that. It's not the same standard as criminal, so you are correct in that you could make a logical argument, well, this person's paying the bill, and according to their ISP, this is the IP address assigned to their cable modem at the time of the file transaction. You can make the logical inference there, and in a civil case, you might be right. But, no, an IP address, if you're trying to track down and prove that the person assigned to an IP address is responsible for what's actually going on a machine, it's usually the case, but not always. Again, back to the school where I used to deal with file sharing all the time. I think it's one of the reasons we haven't talked about it on the decking very much is I haven't had to deal with it in a long time. You know, whereas I was getting beat up over the head with it every day. We would have students who would borrow each other's machines because they would get their machine knocked off the network for file sharing. And, you know, we had an instance where one girl had gotten like 16 machines blocked for file sharing before they finally called in because like half the dorm couldn't connect to the damned internet. So,
nice.
What the hell, man? So, you know.
If I can't have internet, none of you can.
Oh, basically. Well, it was more, hey, my computer's not working. Can I use yours? And she had like LimeWire on a flash drive or something stupid like that. though. But they were getting blocked under other people's names. That's why it took us so long to figure out what the hell was going on. And so from a purely technology perspective, I'd say there's lots of doubt that an IP belongs to a person. But if you're arguing a legal inference for a civil case, you can make a good argument, maybe not that that person was the one doing, but maybe that that person should have been responsible for what's going across their internet connection. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, I'd like to see more evidence than just an IP address, personally. But moving on in the discussion here on copyright, just to make things stupid. So we know that they're still suing people over this crap. California, this is from WND.com. California routinely sets the standard for progressive legislation, adopting law after law the rest of the country isn't even considering. For example, California lawmakers adopted mandatory promotions of homosexuality in schools years before President Obama thought of it. Promotions of homosexuality. Really? Were they saying?
Yep.
Okay. I'm making sure the phrasing is right there, because I'm not actually familiar with this news source. They may be biased.
It's meaning that homosexuality isn't something to be shunned. It's a normal sexual preference. And
because when I hear the word promoting, that says advertising. It's like, hey kids, you should be gay. God. No. You're just going to confuse people worse. Come on. Okay, so like,
wait a minute. The Woody's not happening with this situation. Are you sure I should be gay?
God. Now the state has had it again. Okay, I think this may be a right-wing site, but just looking at some of their other links, but I saw this story in a couple other places, and this one looked the best, so maybe that's my own bias shining through, right? But WND, I wonder if that stands for something. Let's see. WND doesn't say anything about what it actually is. A whole bunch of anti-Hillary crap at the bottom of the page, though. So, okay, yeah, it's a right-wing site. That's fine. Okay, so it's a biased news source. That's fine. That's just like, I didn't notice that when I was skimming the article earlier, so it's like, wait a minute.
Finding a non-biased news source is kind of exceptionally difficult, if not completely impossible. You just need to be open that the site is biased so that they know which grain of salt to eat whenever you're consuming the news. Do I need to think this is probably not as bad, or is it worse, or is this coming from left wing, right wing, just so you know how to tint it?
Well, okay, the article is definitely coming from a right wing site, because looking at some of the other headlines on here, doctor ousted for talking about risks of LGBT behavior, football coach banned for prayer goes on offense, entire police department resigns over. Okay, yeah, that's a right wing site. Cool. Judges, what? Okay, I'm going to get distracted reading these other headlines. I want to go back to the article on California's state government is trying to claim copyright over everything the state government produces. The state is proposing a bill that would let the state government and its branches copyright all government works, as in everything, even videos of public meetings. The warning from the Electronic Frontier Foundation explained that the California Assembly Committee on Judiciary has approved AB 2880 to grant local and state governments copyright authority along with other intellectual property rights. The state's current model is similar to federal governments. With few exceptions, the audio, visual, and written work of government employees is available for the public to use. So, at its core, the bill grants the state and local government the authority to create, hold, and exert copyrights, including materials created by the government. So, the gist of the article is that the state government would hold copyright over the videos of meetings, the audio transcripts, press briefings, memos, you know, all the usual stuff that reporters use to say, hey, these people are corrupt, they're doing stupid shit. You imagine you couldn't see a video on YouTube of a state legislature meeting, you know, where they're discussing maybe a bill you're interested in, and it's flipping California. So sometimes these things are actually interesting because they're talking about crazy shit. Because they gave us a copyright takedown notice. I mean, anything a public, okay, the California state public funds the government. Therefore, the California public should at least have a say in what is copywritten out of this shit. Usually, government works are public domain.
It should be public domain at the very least for everyone in California paying taxes. So, yeah, if you're in California and you own property, then everything that state produces, you own. I could see possible an argument, if you're going to get really stupid, that Madman, several states over, can't use this because he doesn't own it. But every citizen in California owns everything that state produces.
Why would they be making it, though?
That's my thought. I don't understand why. What does this accomplish for them?
Are they trying to get around... Well, one, they might try to turn it into a stream of revenue, saying that you have to pay us to see the minutes if you're a reporter. But what I think's more likely to happen is they're trying to squeeze out the media from reporting on anything that they think would paint California in a negative light.
Backdoor censorship. That's exactly what it is. It's backdoor censorship. They want to be able to control what's said about them using their own references. So instead of saying we're going to outlaw reporting on the government, they're saying we're going to exert copyright. Is this not exactly what people were screaming about copyright 10, 15 years ago now? When the MP3 stuff started kicking up?
Yeah, I don't know.
With the difference with MP3s, the Beatles own their shit, or at least should. If I'm a producer for a music company and I front a band a bunch of money and say, I'm buying the rights to your music, are you cool with this? We shake hands, I give them a shit ton of money, and they start making albums for me. I own that music. I've invested in it. I'm selling it to make a profit. That's ownership that you should back up. That's personal property rights. This is an entity forcing you to give them money and then using that money to produce something and then saying you have no right to see what we're doing with your cash. Like, that's fucked up. No, it's my money that you're using. What you're doing belongs as much to me as anyone else. I have rights to all of the material you produce. And I think that should go to universities receiving public funds. If you have a cancer study and you received a grant from the National Cancer, I don't even know if that one's actually a federal grant or if it's an individual thing.
Any government affiliated grant.
Any government affiliated grant, and you're getting money from it, then taxpayers have a right to review your work and see what you're doing.
As opposed to needing a subscription to an $800 a month journal or some bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, we paid for it to be produced. We have a right to it. Everyone in California that's funding any branch of their government has a right to see the minutes to their meetings, all of that.
I like what Psychro said in the chat room. This is so cyberpunk it hurts. It really is. I mean, this is bullshit. You know what it is? This shows that copyright law is so broken that it can be used for censorship, that this is obviously what they want to do with it. I mean, why else would you want to claim copyright over government works? What, are you afraid that you're afraid Nevada is going to steal your great ideas? That's kind of the point of the separate states, is so you can experiment and see which one, you know, if it works. I mean,
well, California has legislated itself out of renewable water, and dumped itself so full of debt it may go bankrupt. I don't think it's a model for good state governance.
I'm not saying that California is doing it right. I'm just saying that's kind of the point, though, isn't it?
Yeah, so we can see what they're fucking up on and not fuck up the same way.
Thank you, Madman. That was very concise.
I'm getting the point of being a fucking anarchist. I don't think governments do anything well. There's just some things I still want governments to do, maybe, just because I don't trust Joe Blow down the street to do it. But then I think Joe Blow down the street runs for government, and then he's doing it. So it's... at least if Joe Blow's doing it, I can ignore him or walk away.
So, all right. So, yeah, copyright law is still broken. Just because we haven't talked about it in a long time, still worth pointing out. Copyright law is still fucking broken to the point that a state government wants to use it to control what's said about them. Seriously, I honestly don't know what else you would do with it. I really don't.
It needs to be challenged, and a judge just needs to come out and say, no, this is public domain. You are a public official. Anything job-related, you have no privacy.
Yeah.
All right, let's go on. This next story is from the LA Times, and it pretty much falls in the no-duh category. Headline here is, when you buy digital content on Amazon or iTunes, you don't exactly own it. No shit, Sherlock.
I'm going to go with no-duh, and that fucking sucks, and it's crappy as hell. I should be able to leave my digital library to anyone I want, or resell it.
So, the article here says, buy a book, an e-book on Amazon or an album on Apple's iTunes and you own it, right? Maybe not so much as you think. It's all about what the tech industry calls digital rights management, and the bottom line for consumers is that there are significant differences between owning a tangible product and owning its electronic equivalent. A study to be released Friday by researchers at Case Western Reserve University School of Law in UC Berkeley finds that a sizable percentage of consumers have no clue about what they're really purchasing when they quote-unquote buy digital content. They mistakenly believe they can keep those goods permanently, lend them to friends and family, give them as gifts, leave them in their wills, resell them, and use them on their devices of choice, it says. In other words, they think buying something means buying something. But in the magical land of digital content... Oh, God, I hate that. Don't call it magic.
In the magical little land, demons are singing to me from a box. That's how music gets transmitted, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is. And the parchment that runs your monitor is almost out of... The little demon that paints the screen on your monitor told me he's about out of pink ink.
That just means I have to watch less porn. Or more Asian porn.
Or in grayscale. these are going to be in black and white. Is that a problem? And by the way, if anybody doesn't get the Discworld joke, you have a serious lack of culture, and I feel sad for you. In the magical land of digital content, ownership is relative. The reality is that for many digital transactions, there are restrictions on activities that you might think come with ownership, said Aaron Perzwoski, a Case Western Reserve University law professor and co-author of the study. He told me consumers received a wake-up call in 2009 when Amazon electronically erased George Orwell's 1984 and Animal Farm from, of all books. I forgot about Animal Farm.
Oh, those are two amazing books that everyone should read and possibly own.
From people's Kindle e-readers because of a copyright dispute. Although Amazon gave refunds for the deleted books and subsequently said it wouldn't pull off a stunt like that again, the point was made. It showed that things are different when it comes to digital content, Perzwoski said. This wouldn't happen in the physical world. Nobody comes to your door and demands that you give back a book. But in the digital world, they just go into your Kindle and take it. Yet consumers remain largely unaware of such distinctions. And the article goes on explaining the differences between digital content and, you know, how you can potentially get fucked over by it. So, as opposed to reading the rest of the article, what I'm actually going to recommend is if you buy music on Amazon or iTunes, burn it to a CD, or if you can get a converter, convert it into a unrestricted format like an MP3 or a WAV or a FLAC, and get it out of a DRM-controlled format. If you buy something, get it onto a format that you can control it and keep it and put it on whatever the hell you want. Every portable music player will play an MP3. So if you get it into an MP3, you can keep it forever. If you download an ebook, convert it to a PDF, or print it. If you print it, even if they go in and delete your digital copy, you still got it. But if you convert it to a format that's not locked down, like a PDF or just a text file, you can then dump it off on a file share somewhere, or a worm drive, or burn it to a DVD or a CD or a Blu-ray, or whatever. You know, get it on something so that if you paid for it and you care about it, you can't lose it. You know, physical copies, or at least external media, is fantastic because people can't delete it. I still to this day recommend people go buy, Psychros is getting ahead of me, he saw one of the Digital Dojo links. I still say go buy a moderately sized external hard drive, you know, preferably multi terabyte. I keep a 3 gig, 4 gig, whatever, right? Damn, Psychros, you're getting way ahead of me on Digital Dojo. Shut up. But yeah, he is getting ahead of me on Digital Dojo because that's what the I for is. I got an article for stripping the DRM off Kindle books. But anyways, you should, you know, get it into an open format and back it up, print it, whatever. Get it so that you can't lose it. You know, if that means burning it on a CD and locking it into a footlocker under your bed, whatever. But, you know, and unless you just don't give a shit if you lose it, in that case, why are you wasting your money on it?
I do think this is somewhat a moral argument for piracy, though. If they're going to steal what I've purchased, why should I care about their property rights? They're not caring about mine.
So, it gets even weirder with games. Games that have the always online DRM. Like Blizzard games are a fantastic example of this. You have to connect to Battle.net to play StarCraft 2 or Diablo 3.
That was a reason I wasn't buying those, and I just bought their first-person shooter because it's so much fucking fun.
I did too, and it's the same problem, right? So what happens if Battle.net shuts down, I don't know, 2 years from now? Maybe they get bought out by a company that doesn't give a fuck and just shuts it down. I mean, I don't think Blizzard would go out of business and shut this stuff down. That would be an extremely stupid move, but weirder things have happened. There are lots of games that came out, you know, between, say, 2000, 2005, 2006, probably even up to 2010, that they have shut the servers for down. You can go buy the box, you can get the game on disc, you cannot play it because the servers that the DRM has to check with are gone. They're not there.
The Conan role-playing game or RPG still up?
I don't know, but MMOs are another one where if the servers shut down, you can't play anymore. And we've talked about the private World of Warcraft server where they were maintaining old versions of the game, because you could make a pretty good argument that it is not the same game anymore. You know, I mean, if you bought the classic World of Warcraft, and you wanted to play classic World of Warcraft and not buy all the expansions and not play the new simplified versions, part of me says you got a right to play what you paid for, even though Blizzard shut the servers down for the original.
Yeah, but, you know, I agree, but at the same time, my question comes, you bought it to begin with, and you agreed to their terms of service to begin with.
Well,
with a full understanding of their model.
On the MMO, I can agree with that. And it's, when you're buying an MMO, you know it's an online game. Some of the single player games, I kind of contest that. There's nowhere in big red letters or even really small black letters on some of these games that say you must always have an internet connection to play this single player game.
Actually, and to be fair, some of the boxes would say requires an on or always on internet connection on the back.
Some does say require an internet connection, but it doesn't say always on.
Some of them do say that, to be fair. All of them. I'm gonna concede the point that they don't advertise it. But some of them do in fact say that, you know, they required an always on internet connection.
With StarCraft, at least in their original packaging, the new one, I know that one doesn't say always on. And you almost have to have a magnifying glass to see that it needs an internet connection at all. So if you're buying something thinking I can play the single player version of it without a network connection and are expecting that ability, I think you're being screwed there. And with the way current copyright laws set up, you can't even get your money back once you buy a physical disc and open it up.
So think about this. Mad Ben, I know you've been getting into retro gaming a little bit. You know, playing the classic consoles. There will never be retro gaming for the current versions of the consoles. Like 10 years from now, nobody's going to be retro gaming on PS4s and Xbox Ones because those systems require internet connections. And remember, Xbox One got absolutely murdered over this on release, and they backed off a little bit. You have to have an internet connection. So, you know, 15 years from now, if you want to play your classic Xbox One and the servers aren't there, you can't play it, which means you either have to go find a crack online, which means piracy. And since that violates all kinds of copyright laws, so there's that. I mean, we are creating a culture that will not... The reason we know about the Egyptians is because they carved their shit in stone. We don't know that much about the ancient Mesopotamians because they carved it in clay. We are carving our stuff in stuff that's more ephemeral than clay. So, I don't know. Did that make sense?
Well, the fact that they might not know that I played Halo doesn't bother me. The fact that I'm buying Overwatch and let's say in 5 years, I want to give my copy of Overwatch to someone else and just never play it again. I can't do that. That does bother me. Or if I pass away and I'm like, oh, Laser doesn't have this game, I'll will it to him so that our little group still has how many ever players. Bam. That pisses me off. If I own something, I should be able to do whatever I want with it. Now, I will have to concede some limits when it comes to gaming only with the massive multiplayers. If you're buying an MMO, you're expecting that online experience and it's going to change. If you're buying a single-player game, it's yours. If they kill the server, I think they should give you a refund. Or just make it where you don't need the server.
So the link I just posted takes care of that problem. Steam offers offline mode.
That is true. Steam does. But Blizzard doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is, in those cases, piracy is probably justified. So, moving on. Next article is from Tech Dirt. I don't normally like using Tech Dirt because I feel like they're biased too, but I already used the white right wing article for the conversation, so why not, right?
Find me an internet source that is not biased.
Find a source pure that's decking. Not biased.
You are biased, and you know it.
Of course I'm biased. I'm being an ass. Biased towards being correct.
And
that's
failing.
A correct bias.
Next one's up from Tech Dirt. Government argues that indefinite solitary confinement is perfectly acceptable punishment for failing to decrypt devices. Until recently, we covered the ongoing jailing of a former Philadelphia police officer for his refusal to unlock encrypted devices for investigators. John Doe. Why are they changing his name? We knew his name in the last article I read on this shit. Is suspected of receiving child porn, but the government apparently can't prove its case without access to hard drives and his personal computer. Seriously, why did they change his name to John Doe? We had his name in the other article. It's been published.
Because they're trying to protect the pederast. This is a normal sexual function that we're pushing. We have to remove these negative stereotypes from pederasts and protect them.
Man, you're going to make me hurt you.
You're 75 miles away. You're not driving in. I'm saying.
It depends on how pissed off you get me. And I know people who live closer than that. And although they don't, not all of them have guns.
Yeah, but all of them would be willing to take a baseball bat to my knees for that comment.
Yes, they would. So,
and I haven't drunk yet.
So far, and I do have the evidence guns. Is still seeking is a foregone conclusion, an argument the presiding judge found persuasive. The foregone conclusion is based on an interview with his estranged sister, who claimed she once saw something resembling child porn on his computer. Although she can't say for sure whether it involved the devices the government sees access to and its own expert, who says it's his best guess that child porn can be found on the device. Hardly compelling, but that's compelling enough that he's has spent 7 months in jail to date. The government has filed its response to his motion by saying to stay the contempt order. It argues that Doe can spend the rest of his life in jail for all it cares. If he wants to be released, he just needs to unlock the encrypted devices. So, this is obviously the follow-up article we talked about last week, and they're now starting to refer to him as John Doe. But it's apparently an Apple Mac Pro computer. The reason I do occasionally like using Tech Dirt is because they at least link back to the actual court filings. They have the document in the story, so if you want to go read up on what's going on. And the article goes on talking about how, well, his being in solitary confinement may actually be better for him than being put in general population, because he did work with the police. And the general population
is a pederast, and your life expectancy in prison is rape minus an hour and a half.
So, it's interesting that they've got other evidence against the guy, and they've got they've got a confession from his sister. Well, not confession, they got testimony from his sister. They've got other evidence. I mean, normally my argument against these guys is, go do actual police work. In this case, it seems like they've done that.
They have reached probable cause. They got a warrant to search his devices. He is not complying with the warrant.
Yeah. So, I don't know. If he's actually a kid, he did cut his head off with a shovel. I mean, that's just shovel.
He's not even making the only legitimate legal argument I personally see in it. He can deny that the equipment's his. The reason I am not complying with your search warrant is I don't have that password. That's not my computer. He's already admitted it's his computer. He just doesn't think they have the right to see what's on it. Well, some judge has already said you have probable cause. You're not even arguing that it's insufficient probable cause. You're just not complying.
But yeah, they're going to let him rot in jail for contempt of court forever, which we've joked about judges being able to do that before.
No, they've always been able to do it. It's just, it usually doesn't happen. Generally comply.
So, next article up is from BGR. Don't blink or your PC might upgrade itself to Windows 10. Microsoft is keen for you to upgrade to Windows 10, so keen, in fact, that it will give it away for free. And hey, Microsoft reckons you shouldn't even have to go through the trouble of scheduling an update yourself. It can do that for you, too. You want it? You know, what's that? You like Windows 7 better? Well, don't leave your PC unattended for too long. CNET reports that some users of Windows 7 and 8, Windows is auto-scheduling a date and time to upgrade to Windows 10. So it's much like how Windows forces regular updates on its users, only in this case, you're not getting some security patches. You're forcibly getting upgraded to an entirely new operating system. And one of the reasons I want to cover this article is it actually happened to RU. His computer upgraded itself to Windows 10. According to him, it just fucking did it. It came up, said it was scheduled, and the next thing he knew, his machine was restarting and installing Windows 10.
My issue with that is, what if I have programs that aren't compatible with it? I should be able to keep what I've got. I will assume whatever risk comes from running an unpatchable operating system. But risks are worth it.
Microsoft at this point is saying, fuck you, we're taking the Apple approach, and if you don't like it, you can go suck a lemon. I mean,
that's one reason I think Apple doesn't have a large business share.
That's true. And to be fair, I mean, I've got most of my machines on Windows 10, and I've pretty much gotten it straightened out, and I still run Anti-Beacon. Don't get me wrong. I don't need Windows 10 monitoring everything I do.
Well, it may be an excellent operating system. That's not my issue with it.
The issue is you're not getting a choice.
I should choose what I'm running on my machine.
So, well, Microsoft disagrees. They think they should, you know, be able to have your credit cards and make purchasing decisions for you. You know that's fucking next. All the recommendation shit they're doing.
Hookers and blow?
Stop and think about this for a minute. How many online services, iTunes, Steam, the Microsoft Store, have a saved credit card or PayPal account or something along those lines, right? Most people, they save their credit card in there. I mean, not everybody, and some people get burner cards or just link it to, special bank accounts that so they can at least put some control in it. But a lot of people just put their fucking debit card in there, right? So between that and a suggestion engine, how long is it reasonably going to be before, oh, well, we're just going to make $10 of purchases for you a month in apps we think you'll use?
That's not going to happen. And the reason that's not going to happen is, one, to purchase anything or be liable for a purchase, you have to affirmatively assent to it. There's already been blowback from kids.
Well, you agreed to it in the EULA.
There's already been blowback from kids accidentally buying things in single games, which are costing companies money and legal fees and settlements. They're not going to auto-buy shit for you. And the other reason that's not going to happen, these businesses want your money. If they do something that outlandish, you'll just stop doing business.
So,
Steam's going to suggest what it thinks I want to buy. It's never going to buy anything for me.
Just throwing the concept out there. Oh, and we updated the terms of the EULA. You agreed to the $10 a month plan. We actually rolled you into that plan from the free account, but you agreed to the $10 a month. Let me see that shit happening.
I could see a lot more things going more subscription-based than they are, which I think is going to suck, but it's their right to do it. It's a legitimate business model.
I used to do a couple of the different boxes, Battle Box, Nerd Block, shit like that. And you ever try unsubscribing from some of that stuff?
Holy hell! I know somebody that does Loot Crate, and a lot of the stuff they get in Loot Crate, especially like the T-shirts and socks and shit, are fucking amazing, and I would love to get them. But you get one or two awesome things and then some cheap plastic something that, yeah, it looks cool, but do I really want to keep it for 20 years?
Well, sure.
Is it worth spending money on? Yeah, it's a little bobblehead Darth Vader or Predator, but yeah.
Well, I mean, why do you think I canceled my subscriptions to these things? Is, you know, you just have that epiphany one day of, okay, these are neat, but I'm wasting money here. And you know, it's interesting trying to unsubscribe from some of these things. You can subscribe real easy. Unsubscribing is usually a help desk ticket and a couple of emails back and forth, and then they ask you to fill out two or three surveys, and it's like, holy hell, I'll just cancel the credit card. Thanks. I mean,
yeah, after you stop getting paid for a while, you'll stop giving me shit, right?
No, we're just going to send you to collections and still keep sending shit. I mean, it's just like,
you know, you gotta look at those boxes, and I think, you know, like for instance, Loot Crate. You know, yeah, you get a bunch of junk stuff that you really don't care about. Those one or two items, is it worth, you know, the $13, $14, $15, however much it is, per month?
Depends on the pay model, because some of that shit is really, really cool. I like the Versus Loot Crate. I almost wish I had it whenever the dudes at work were bringing shit in from it. I'm like, that's fucking amazing.
Well, here you go. $215. 1 year plan. That's total price.
So, and I tell you this, I did do Bespoke Post for a while, and that one was actually not too bad to unsubscribe from. That one did not require so many hoops. But I liked their model in that they had three or four different boxes each month that you could pick from. And if you didn't see anything you liked, you just didn't get anything that much, so you just passed it. So
Did you get a discount for passing a month?
No. Just didn't pay that month.
Oh, so it's a month-to-month fee. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's not like you agreed to a year or something stupid like that. And, you know, I mean, some of the stuff you got out of it was pretty cool, but, you know, by the time you get into the third month of just canceling it because nothing looks cool or you just don't want to spend $50 on a box that month, it's like, I'm just going to cancel this.
$50? Good lord.
40, I think it was what it actually was. 40 plus shipping, so... Now, admittedly, some of the stuff in it was pretty good. Like, I got some pretty good, like, travel bags and, you know, like, grill shit and stuff like that. So, I'm not... It was a little bit higher quality than... But some of it wasn't, and that's the thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the loot crates, some of it is stuff that they are having made for their system, and that stuff's really awesome. A lot of it is... what is sitting in a warehouse somewhere that could possibly fit whatever theme this thing is, and we're going to dump that in the box and send it to
you. Yep.
It's all right, we're dumping warehouses.
We're way off topic here. And it's cool, though. I mean, it's a good conversation. But so, next story up is from bleepingcomputer.com. In a surprising end to TeslaCrypt, the developers shut down their ransomware and released the master decryption key. Over the past few weeks, an analyst for ESET had noted that the developers of TeslaCrypt have been slowly closing their doors, while their previous distributions have been switching over to distributing the CryptXXX ransomware. When the ESET researcher realized what was happening, he took a shot in the dark and used the support chat on Tesla payment site to ask if they would release the master TeslaCrypt decryption key. To his surprise, they agreed to do so and posted it on their now-defunct payment site. And here's a screenshot. Project closed. Master key for decrypt. 440A24 blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to read the whole thing out. But I'll have the link in the show notes, and you can certainly go if you have TeslaCrypt. Wait for other people to make universal decryption software. We are sorry. Bullshit that they are sorry. I actually kind of wonder if they got hacked because of that "we are sorry" line. You know what I mean? That, or they're getting ready to put out a new one and they want everyone to have to buy it new again as opposed to, you know, just sending out the updates for the existing customers.
Oh, that would slightly suck.
I wouldn't put it past them. I mean, you're talking about people selling Crypto Locker. I mean, you're talking about people selling ransomware, and you're worried about it sucking for the people who put together the ransomware packages? Like, gee, I feel sorry for Hitler on how much he had to spend on sarin gas. I mean, come on, dude.
Mustard gas. He made it at home, and then huffed it in his bunker and died. You can't... Hitler wasn't all bad. I mean, after all, he shot Hitler.
Oh, did you want Hitler to survive? But back on topic, I mean, they actually posted the master decryption key and "we are sorry"? Bullshit. So now that the decryption key has been publicly available, this allowed TeslaCrypt expert Blood Dolly to update the Tesla decoder to version 1.0 so that he can decrypt version 3 and 4 of the TeslaCrypt encrypted files. This means anyone who has had TeslaCrypt encrypted files with .xxx, .ttt, micro, .mp3, or encrypted files without an extension can now decrypt their files for free. So, and of course, ESET has updated their tool, Bloody Dolly's tool. So, if you have a machine that's been infected with TeslaCrypt and you were hoping that somebody would put out an update, it is now possible to decrypt it. I imagine that they're going to be
rotting in hell. I also imagine that too.
Yeah, well, that's fantasy. I'm actually imagining they're going to be putting out a new version of some kind of a ransomware soon. So
maybe we should sic the RIAA lawyers on these people. Have them do something
fantastic,
nice and useful.
I hate you. I hate you. Fight. You know, what's the 4chan thing? Now kiss. I mean, it's what the
fuck? Toss a knife in the middle of them and just see who gets to it first.
Oh, so many jokes. So, anyways. Oh, Psychros is correcting us both in the chat room. It was Zyklon B, apparently, he used.
So. Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I haven't had to gas juice recently.
Damn it, Madman!
Now that's something that can be cut out and turned into a sound clip. Oh, I'm a horrible person.
That one too, actually. So, all right, well, next article up. I was going to skip it, but it's hilarious, and I want static here for the next article. So, Google has patented a self-driving car that will glue people to the hood if you crash into them. Google has patented a technology that will attach people to the front of the car if your self-driving car, or to the front of your car after a self-driving car after a collision, the Mercury News reports. The adhesive layer would coat the front of a self-driving car, but be covered by something that's not sticky. When you hit someone, the outer layer would be removed, exposing the glue. After a crash, the victim would be stuck to the front of the car, preventing them from another injury as they're thrown backwards. The existence of a patent about gluing people to cars doesn't mean it's actually going to happen.
So now I can get charged with assault and kidnapping if I don't stop.
Well, it's a self-driving car, so it's not gonna stop, right? It's gonna be like, the self-driving cars are just gonna steal people. You just get run up, hit them, they get glued to the hood, and the car drives off into nowhere. I mean, fuck. You know, Google's gonna start stealing people, and it's gonna be like that scene out of Blade where they had all the people in the saran wrap.
We needed to start a blood farm.
After the crash, the victim would be stumped to the front of the car. I already read that. The existence of a patent about gluing people to cars doesn't mean it's going to actually happen. Large technology companies like Google patent lots of ideas, but only a few actually make it into production. Self-driving cars are, in theory, safer than cars driven by humans, but they still get into accidents. In February, one of Google's driverless cars hit a bus in Mountain View, and the owner of a Tesla Model S claimed earlier this month that his car crashed into a trailer while in summon mode. What the hell is summon mode on a Tesla Model S?
Oh, that's when you park it at your house, and no. Your friend picks you up and takes you to his house, and then you summon your car. It's what Batman's Batmobile does. It goes
I knew the Batmobile thing. I was Tesla summon mode. So summon your Tesla from your phone. Release. It might really be the Batman thing.
Yeah.
Oh, good. The video's not auto-playing. Here we go. Last fall, Tesla version 7 software introduced a range of new autopilot, active safety and convenience features, make it more enjoyable. Using Summon, once you arrive home and exit Model S or Model X, you can prompt it to do the rest. Open your garage door, enter your garage, park itself, and shut down. In the morning, you wake up, walk out the front door, and summon your car. It will open the garage door and come to greet you. More broadly, Summon also eliminates the burden of having to squeeze in and out of tight parking spaces. During the beta stages of Summon, we would like customers to become familiar with it on private property. Eventually, your Tesla will be able to drive anywhere across the country to meet you, charging itself along the way. It will sync your calendar and know exactly when to arrive. My God, it really is the Batman.
Your car comes and gets you.
It's a beta version of the car coming to get you. You are absolutely correct.
Oh, yeah. NPR has already started griping about the increased carbon dioxide pollution this is going to cause.
It's an electric car!
It wasn't just a Tesla. Google was also looking into it.
It's a freaking electric car. What do they care?
No.
Oh, wait.
Google.
Carbon. I forgot. Electric cars are technically coal-powered cars. So
yeah,
I
they're
guess
coal-powered
cars. Yeah, carbon. Extra carbon pollution there.
It's just now that instead of people getting a parking spot, if they can't get a parking spot, they get out of their car can circle and come and get them.
Now, here's in all honesty, especially around where I live, where there's, it's sometimes hard to get parking, it would be kind of cool to have the car drop you off and then drive back home, park in the driveway, and then, at the end of the day, come back and get you to go back home. Because that accomplishes
that
a couple of
cool
things. One, you're not paying for parking. Two, you have a car parked out in front of your house, so nobody tries to break into the damn thing where you're not home, because you're at work. Psychos the demon will use this. Yes, it will.
Oh, run no, the demon's going to wait till the automated motorcycles so they can put chainsaws on it and properly have the correct kill machines. Humans can hide in buildings. Motorcycles can go in buildings. Cars, they're stuck outside.
You've thought about this.
Automated motorcycle that you need to fear, my friend.
So, but Tesla summon mode. Well, I mean, they're saying it'll actually stop and recharge itself. How does that shit work?
I'm not sure how
pull up and be like, gas station attendant, feed me.
You would have to have the Swifty version of an electric charging station. Because they already figured out how to take your money if you're not there. That part's been taken care of for decades now.
Oh, sure, it'll just charge you a bill. I'm not worried about that. I'm just more, you know, is the car going to pull up and honk and, you know, gas station guy's going to come out and nobody's going to be in the car?
Like, beep, beep, feed me Seymour.
Or I'll glue you to my hood and drive away.
So want my car to say that.
Or feed me Seymour or I'll glue you to the hood.
And drive away.
Oh, well, static's not back yet, but I've got nowhere to go except the last story here. Oh, here we go. This is from TechCrunch. Let me go ahead and post the links here. I just now realized I forgot to do that.
Ooh, I'm laughing. If you want to, we can turn Cycros into a robot and just have one of the AT&T voices read off his statements from the IRC channel.
That would make a fantastic podcast, wouldn't it? You just have a whole bunch of these voices reading out what people are saying in an IRC chat room. Of course, it'd eventually get behind in the conversation, but, you know, hey, that could be fun. This last article here is from TechCrunch. Pornhub launches Bang Fit so you can bang to get fit. And they've gone with a very 80s-tastic vibe for their advertising here. And I mean, it's really 80s-tastic. If you want a good laugh, go watch their promotion video on the bottom of the article here. It's like naked, but not really naked people. I mean, it's like, what the hell? So,
they're also paying for bug fixes. If you find a bug on Pornhub, not only do you get to masturbate, but they'll pay you money to fix it or to submit it to them.
In seemingly bizarre news out of the porn industry, Pornhub is launching a new fitness system, wearable plus workout videos, called Bang Fit. And as its name suggests, it helps you bang, get fit. Here's how it works. Users can join the game at the website, which allows users to sync the game to their phones. Bang Fit offers options for one player, two players, and three players. From there, you can choose your sexercise with information about how each position burns calories for a man or a woman over a 30-minute period. That's where the Bang Fit band comes into play. Users pop their phone into the Bang Fit band, the belt worn by one player, to measure their success in getting fit while they get busy. For now, Pornhub says the Bang Fit band is going to be available soon and that the software production is in beta. Apparently, the author has tried two phones with the web app to check it out, and the web app failed to recognize one of the two phones as paired. He also can't seem to figure out this thing supports gay and lesbian couples. Really? Well, I guess they would check that. It's TechCrunch.
All right. Milo has already taught me that this will work for gay couples. Because gay and straight just depends on whether you're the catcher or the pitcher.
What about two chicks?
Lesbians don't exist, according to him.
Oh, okay.
Not my quote. I'm quoting Milo.
Milo Yiannopoulos, for anybody who doesn't know. So, that said, this thing is a fun marketing stunt for Pornhub. The company has a early foothold in VR. Really?
Yeah.
I have a Gear VR.
If it exists, there's porn apps for it.
It's Rule 34 for hardware.
Yeah, Rule 34.5.
Yeah. So the video for this thing is absolutely amazing, very 80s-tastic, and it's hilarious. This is basically Guitar Hero for sex.
So, how many thrusts before you get star power?
Well, it has a one-player version, Madman, and you have a smartphone. Why don't you get back with us next week on a report for this?
I can see that for building upper arm strength somewhat. Well, at least endurance.
Endurance.
It'll tone, but you're not going to get much more muscle mass.
I don't know. Maybe it has really creative single-player videos. It's like, okay, first you get the rope, then you get two chairs, some duct tape, a mop, and I don't know where I'm going with this. It's getting weird.
I don't know. I was just going with an oscillating fan and wrist weights.
Oscillating fan. And that's where lesbians come from. What the fuck? Yeah, the video makes it very clear. This is Guitar Hero for sex. So...
So it's kind of like all those people that thought they'd play Guitar Hero and learn to play an actual guitar. This is going to be people playing sex games thinking they're learning how to get better at sex, and in fact they're just getting a useless skill that they could have gotten better at sex just by having sex.
There is a two-player version, so I imagine the two-player version you're probably actually getting practice. So, of course... if it stops halfway through, your partner's going to be pretty pissed at you when it's like, but the game said stop.
But that one is, how's the chick burning the calories? Do you switch up who's doing the thrusting?
Well, I assume it has different positions, for different videos.
I expose people to magic.
Yes, that's a very magical exposure there, Morps. Be careful and don't do that exposure near schools, or else you'll get on the Hit Me With a Baseball Bat website.
I saw a fantastic set of images earlier today, and I wish I'd saved the link. You're talking about getting put on the ball kick list there. It was somebody who was going to do a escape stunt, but instead of it being some kind of a death trap, they had a middle school class there to observe, and a police officer standing by. If he was unable to escape in the allotted time, the robotic arm was going to pull down his pants and expose him to this group of minors. So, deciding that, death traps are for pussies, he was afraid he was going to be put on the registered sex offender list for life if he didn't fail to get out in time. I wish I'd kept that link, because it was hilarious. And the look of earnestness on his face as he did it.
No, 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 sorry.
All right, I've lost the sound effect I was looking for. There it is. I really do need to start prepping these ahead of it. Two things up for Digital Dojo. First up is a GitHub link to the Steam Relay Bot. This is a C# program, which it sits in a Steam group chat. You can run a few. It has a few built-in commands, and it can relay the Steam group chat to an IRC channel. So it's open source. It's distributed as C# code. So if you just want to run it, you can download Visual Studio Community Edition for free, compile the C#, and you have the Steam bot. But because it is C#, that means you can actually go in, edit the commands, make new commands, change what it's doing. C# is easy to manipulate. So it's a Steam bot. It's the source to a Steam bot. If you want to make your own Steam bot, here's a place to start. I don't think we really make use of Steam group chats, but if you want to troll people who are trying to scam you out of TF2 and CSGO items.
You want to trade for collectible trading cards in Steam?
Smoke weed every day.
The answer is no, but my bot might talk with you now.
And then finally, I have an article from the How-To Geek, and this is what I was laughing at earlier for Psychros, because he was basically describing this. This is a nice article on How-To Geek describing How to get a copy of Calibre eBook Manager, a copy of Alf's DRM Removal Tools, and how to rip all of your Kindle books into DRM-free formats so you can either print them or back them up or whatever, so that you don't necessarily have Amazon reach into your e-reader and delete your books.
Would these tools also work for Audible?
No, no. Audible is audio formats, so you would need a different set of tools for that. But the point is, I found that article with 2 minutes of Googling after reading the first article we talked about tonight about talking about copyright. No, actually, it was the first article in the news where we're talking about them from the LA Times talking about how you don't actually own your ebooks because Amazon could delete them.
Oh, yeah. So, not like I paid money for them or anything. Best say they don't own that money and just get it back in my checking account.
Maybe. So, but, you know, in anything audio suffers from the analog hole. Worst case scenario, you take whatever you're playing it back on, plug a tape recorder into it, or a little solid-state voice recorder, or your cell phone, because most cell phones will do it. Hook a microphone up to it, and just record the damn thing, and now you've got it DRM-free. Although, yeah, if there's a way to strip the DRM off of it, that's nice, because then you don't gotta wait forever day for it. So. Anyways, though, that's all I've got tonight. Listen to the stream, we're always working on it. Pure Ducking is every Thursday. Always check out the Galaxy 15 site, radio site, Twitter handle, feedback forum, and the subreddit, which is surprisingly active. Most people playing a drinking game in there and listing out how long before I mentioned 3D printing. We are about an hour and 4 minutes into the show, 3D printing. And if you're playing the drinking game, 3D printing. I wonder if I actually were to talk about the fact that Peachy Printer and MakerBot getting shut, or MakerBot, they didn't get shut down. They're outsourcing. And, ooh, I was looking into some open-source photogrammetry using Python. So anybody playing the 3D drinking game, I'm actually trying to send you to the hospital right now.
How can you outsource a project that was supposed to build itself? Doesn't that automatically outsource itself?
They're having China make the printers now and then just shipping them. They're not making them in-house anymore.
Okay. Wasn't the MakerBot the idea of if you have a MakerBot, it'll build a MakerBot?
No, that's a RepRap.
RepRap. Okay.
I don't think any of the printers have truly achieved that. You can, if you have a 3D printer, you can usually print some of the parts you need to make another 3D printer, but then you still need to order things like a hot end, stepper motors, guide bars, rails. You know, the Arduino that runs the thing, whatever, right? So, but have I read the closeout for the show? I think I've read the closeout for the show. Are we done?
Yes, we are done.
We're done.
Just trying to send people to a alcoholic-induced hospital trip.
Ah. So should I just sit here and say 3D printing over and over again? Oh, I can make a sound for it. 3D printing. Drink. So, yeah, we'll have Are You Talking About Ball Cancel and me talking about drinking because I said 3D printing again. I think I'm going to play the Pac-Man Dallas sound and stop recording now.